Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host Douglas Impuga in Washington. Here are some of the top stories we are covering on this Monday, March 3rd, 2025. Malaka residents on tension over rumors of an imminent attack by the armed group known as the White Army.
I know that I cannot tell lies to our people so that they can die in the state. I am assured them that nothing will be happen in the United States this time.
Some business people in East Africa welcome visa-free entry system for some countries in the region.
So I will advise most of the countries in Africa, especially our region, East Africa, at least to adopt this system of pre-visa.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Tension grips Malakal over rumors of an imminent attack by the armed group known as the White Army. The government of Upper Nile State warns civilians against believing rumors and assures them Malakal and surrounding areas are protected. Mama Abraham Kwet reports for VOA from Malakal.
Nearly 2 weeks ago, VOA saw soldiers doing a training run on the streets of Malakal, singing songs that mentioned South Sudan's unified forces as they headed toward the river. That was the day they embarked on their mission to Nasser. However, fear has been rising in Malakal, Baliad, Adong, Galachol, Doma, Ulang, and Nasser over rumors that the soldiers were not members of the South Sudan Unified Forces and that the White Army militia opposes their mission. Some groups, including internally displaced persons living at the Fire Brigade site in Malakal and the Bluka Transit Center, have evacuated their women and children over fears the White Army may attack Malakal. Galwa Gret, Upper Nile State's youth leader, says some people have evacuated because they fear a wave of ethnic killings like the one that hit Juba in 2014 if fighting occurs between the White Army and South Sudan People's Defense Forces.
They don't know what will happen. Maybe there will be genocide like that one in Juba. You will be killed according to your ethnicity. The cause of fear was that the country will go back.
Rath says South Sudanese should learn from the conflicts of 2013 and 2016. He urges young people to accept dialogue, not conflict.
I could say that military civic engagement should be done. What I can tell the youth is to refrain from violence. Violence cannot help. It costs us a lot. We need to learn from 2014. We need to learn from that violence. There is nothing from violence. We are blockheads as citizens of Afghanistan.
The SPLM-IG and SPLM-IO have been trading accusations, including allegations that civilians were hit by a bombardment last week. The government forces say they were responding in self-defense after their helicopter was targeted with gunfire by White Army in Doma of Ulang County. First Vice President Riek Machar, who is leader of the SPLM in opposition party, released a statement he wrote to President Salva Kiir Mayardit on Thursday last week, underscoring his concern about growing tension in Upper Nile and the need to deploy unified forces to Nasser. Machar said the forces that are on the way to Nasser are a mixture of Agwelek and Abuchok forces. An official with the SPLA-IO in Greater Upper Nile says the White Army has mobilized and that Kiir has not been responding to the request to send the unified forces to Nasser. Attempts to reach David Amor Majur, the press secretary for President Kiir, were futile. But James Basha, Upper Nile State's Minister for Information, says the soldiers deployed to Nasser are necessary unified forces, not Agwelek or Abuchok fighters. Bacha says the government soldiers will only defend themselves if they are attacked.
Government cannot attack the civilians. If the White Army attack them, just they are defending themselves. Government are taking this as SPDF according to their request. Last time when the governor went there and when the deputy governor went there, they just asking that if possible you change this army, government arm, those are here, and it will be a unified forces. And those who are going now, there are unified forces, according to the agreement.
Basha has assured Malakal residents that they are safe and urges them not to listen to rumors or to evacuate their families. He says the government is not taking forces to Nasser to fight. But he too says those forces will only defend themselves if attacked.
I know that I cannot tell lie to our people so that they can die in the States. I am assured them that nothing will be happen in the United States this time. This white army, they are far. They are in Aulang and Nasser. If there's something, they will fight SSPDF there. If they started to attack these people, they also defend themselves. Nothing will happen in Malakal. I tell them that they don't listen to the rumors.
In a statement issued on Thursday last week, the African Union mission in South Sudan, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, the United Nations mission in South Sudan, and their constituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission expressed concern over rising tensions in Upper Nile State and clashes in Western Equatoria and Western Bahr el-Ghazal states. They called upon the transitional government to de-escalate tensions and rapidly unify and deploy the necessary unified forces to create lasting peace and stability in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwot, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
Some business people working in Kenya, Uganda, and South Sudan are saying the visa-free entry system for some East African countries has helped improve business relationships and encouraged investors. However, some are unhappy because they say they are charged improper registration fees at border points. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Meshek Levy is a Kenyan who owns a business in South Sudan. He says the immigration officers at South Sudan Nimule Entry Point charge him what they call a registration fee, despite the agreement between Kenya and South Sudan allowing free movement across the border. He urges South Sudan to adopt the visa-free system fully like some other East African countries.
The free visa is actually helping people, especially to those who regularly move from Kenya, South Sudan, Uganda, Tanzania. It's really helping. South Sudan has adopted the style from the previous countries who are the members of East Africa. And in these countries, we don't pay anything. But South Sudan has introduced a system where you are entering, they charge you some small money, say that they are registering you in the book, where they demand like $20.
Levy added that South Sudan should open its border to other African countries to encourage more people to visit, boost business, and expand investment opportunities in the country.
So I will advise most of the countries in Africa, especially our region, East Africa, at least to adopt this system of pre-visa. We have seen Kenya has adopted a system. People from Zimbabwe, from Nigeria, they are going to Kenya without paying this visa. And this has encouraged most of the investors like Nigeria to think there are very many in Nairobi and they are doing good business and they are really doing development. And when they come, they bring most employment. And these workers, they employ local people. Same in South Sudan, if they can adapt the system.
A South Sudanese businesswoman in Torit who did not want to be identified by name for fear of reprisal from the government says with visa-free entry, her business has grown, but there are other problems.
I go to Kenya and Uganda to buy my goods. I use Nimule to Uganda, then from Uganda to Kenya. The visa is free, yes. But the tax on goods are too much. Let the government help the women on the issue of tax. We bring goods, but the tax is a lot.
Nuaha Patrick Bindeba is the chairperson for Western Uganda Heavy Truck Drivers Alliance and transport goods across East Africa. He says he has traveled most of the East African community countries and the system of visa-free entry works well except for a few countries like South Sudan.
When you reach in South Sudan, the migration people will put on announcement, the people will not follow what he or she has said. They do their own thing. What I request them to do, they have to put in more effort so that those people who are working from migration give them some rules to follow them to see what they are doing.
Elia Costa, Director General of Immigration, Nationality and Passport, says for residents of the East African Community nations covered by the visa-free entry, if they stay longer than 90 days, they must register and pay a fee at the revenue office where they are staying.
That is the time we call them for registration so that we can know the data of the foreigners who are staying here in South Sudan, not only these countries, but all over the world. Every visa you enter, you have 3 months. So within that 3 months, you have to come and register. Concerning the fee or the amount which is paying, that one is the responsibility of the revenue authority. For the registration, the place where you are going to stay, if you are coming to Juba or you are going to Ibuchi State, that place is the one, the place why you're going to pay the amount of the registration. No registration at the border.
Border agents are not supposed to charge any registration fee at the crossing point. South Sudan became part of the East African Community in 2016 and adopted the system of visa-free entry or visa on arrival for Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, and Burundi. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
Airstrikes in Sudan, particularly in Darfur, have intensified, causing widespread civilian casualties. From Adre, Chad, Henry Wilkins shares the story of Khadija, a refugee who lost her son to one of these aerial attacks in the ongoing war between the Sudan's armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces.
This video, which VOA has been unable to independently verify, purports to show the aftermath of an airstrike. A Darfuri advocacy group says it took place January 21st in the city of Nyala in Sudan's Darfur region. Bodies of babies and children have been strewn about, while what appear to be civilians lie bleeding on the floor. Khadija, who requested her identity be protected for fear of retribution, said she experienced a similar airstrike just days before she was interviewed for this story.
It was the Army's Air Force. They didn't intend to kill my son, but because the rapid support forces were in the area, he was killed by accident while he was playing with other children. The body was in a bad state, so we had to make sure his siblings didn't see him. We had to take his body away quickly.
Khadija's story is not unusual. Rights groups have criticized the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, for carrying out airstrikes in civilian areas of Darfur. Abdullahi Hassan is a researcher on the Sudan conflict for Amnesty International.
Airstrikes happening in Sudan generally, and particularly in Darfur, primarily attacks carried out by the Sudanese armed forces. We have received information that the Sudanese armed forces have carried out strikes in, for example, in the Nyala city in South Darfur.
Hassan, who is also a Kenyan lawyer and human rights advocate, pointed out that international law requires warring parties to ensure the safety of civilians, even in areas where enemy forces are present. At the start of the war nearly 2 years ago, the SAF was the only side in the conflict that could carry out airstrikes. However, a February 26 Reuters report revealed that satellite images show that the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, have at least 3 drones at a South Darfur airport. The US has accused the RSF of genocide. Hassan says Amnesty International is investigating recent reports of RSF drone strikes.
In late 2024 and in early 2025 now, we have also received credible allegations whereby the rapid support forces have also started carrying out airstrikes using drones.
The Reuters report says the drones appear to be Chinese-made. Neither the RSF nor SAF responded to requests for comment. For Khadija, the loss of her son is a devastating blow, but her memories of him remain strong.
He loved his siblings very much. He loved me very much. I never separated from him. I was with him 24 hours a day.
As the conflict in Sudan rages on, the civilian cost of indiscriminate airstrikes is becoming more apparent by the day. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adre, Chad.
Yeah. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A look at the increasing risks of climate-related disasters in the Horn of Africa just after the break. The United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF, says worsening insecurity in the DRC's rebel-controlled cities of Goma and Bukavu is making it extremely difficult to feed and care for thousands of children and women. John James is a communication specialist for UNICEF. He tells VOA's Chinedu 4 that with the airport out of use, warehouses looted and infections soaring, time is running out to save thousands of lives.
Within these towns and cities, there's certainly been an increase in insecurity, grave violations against children, the sorts of major abuses against children in conflict situations. Overall, that's increased threefold since December. And what we've seen as well is just huge numbers of people move. Probably about a million people have been on the move in the last month, many of them either fleeing the conflict or moving from displacement camps. About 700,000 people were living around Goma, and now those camps are almost empty.
What are your biggest worries at the moment?
This is an escalation in the conflict that, you know, takes it to levels that hasn't been seen for many years, even if the region itself hasn't been entirely peaceful for the last couple of decades. But at the moment, I think number of concerns. Protection of children is clearly key. We've seen a big increase in killings, in injuries, in sexual violence, in abductions. All these sorts of things have increased very rapidly. That's a big concern. The massive displacement as well has pushed children and families often away from places where they were going to school, often back to the areas where they originally were displaced. We have seen urban in some areas, like here in Goma, but attendance is well short of what it was before. In some cases, people are scared to school. They're worried about recruitment of children. There's lots of rooms around. But in some cases, well, they've just left where the school is. So education as well. I think finally, just to speak about health, this is an area with a couple of major epidemics going on at the moment, cholera and Mpox. This has caused huge disruption to those care services, with more than 30 health facilities attacked or looted. And so that sort of isolation of people with Mpox has been an issue. And for cholera, you know, people don't have access to clean water anymore in many parts of the city. And so that is obviously something that can accelerate the spread of the disease.
Now, Mr. James, there are reports that warehouses, yours as well as those of other organizations, have been looted. The airport is not safe to bring in staff. So how are you able to feed? How are you able to take care of the medical needs of the hundreds of thousands of those who are now waiting for you to assist them in one way or the other?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually many factors that make it difficult to deliver humanitarian assistance at the moment. One of them, as you say, has been the looting. Our supplies weren't looted in Goma, but they were in Bukavu, this other city to the south. So that's taken a lot of supplies out of what we had to give to people in need. And that's true for many other organizations as well. Secondly, distribution of the supplies that we do have is becoming extremely difficult, because the airport here was the major logistics hub for the entire east of the country. And with that out of action, probably for a good time to come, means, you know, we really have questions about how we can deliver supplies to different areas. And I think finally, just to mention, it's a very difficult funding environment as well. You know, we've had a number of different governments over the last few weeks announced their major cuts in funding for humanitarian aid. And so that, of course, weighs heavily as well on the response. So,
That's John James, a communication specialist for UNICEF, speaking with my colleague Chinedu Ofor. As countries face increasing risk of climate-related disasters in the Horn of Africa, a trade bloc has partnered with humanitarian organizations to develop a preparedness program to enhance early warning systems and strengthen risk management. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Climate extremes are becoming a familiar pattern across the world. Experts say the effects have been devastating in the Horn of Africa due to a lack of preparedness. An 8-country trade bloc is coming up with solutions. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, has developed an anticipatory action plan to help the region's member states minimize losses caused by climate disasters. As Ahmed Amdihun, IGAD's Regional Program Manager for Disaster Risk Management, explains.
We are trying to provide a guidance as IGAD, as a regional body, to help countries and the region transition towards anticipation, which is also in par with the climate crisis narrative, the development narrative, but also, most importantly, on how to address the humanitarian needs and the humanitarian crisis that seems to be perennial in the IGAD region.
The IGAD Anticipatory Action Plan provides member countries and other partners with a roadmap for putting in place necessary measures before disasters strike. The process begins at the IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center in Nairobi, Kenya, where staff members monitor disasters, collect data, and analyze early disaster indicators. The findings are then communicated to member states through alerts or advisories. As Julie Ouma, a geographic information system analyst at IGAD, explains.
Since all major hazards within our region are climate-related, so getting early warning in terms of extreme weather and climate issues will form anticipatory action in terms of disasters.
The anticipatory plan is being implemented in partnership with the key humanitarian organizations with operations in the region, including the World Food Programme Eastern Africa and the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO. FAO Kenya's Hamisi Williams says climate change has affected Africa's food production and productivity.
It has also affected our levels of trade, you know, the entire system. And that means that it has overly reduced the ability of us to have nutritious food on the table.
Williams says having an anticipatory action plan can help the region better cope with future disasters.
We saw how every time we play catch-up with these disasters. But if we have a defined roadmap like now and we follow the roadmap, then what we are trying to do now is to say we are going to be ahead of the disaster when it comes.
IGAD's Amdihun says implementation of the action plan offers a win-win situation for governments and communities in the region.
If the risk, as you anticipate, materializes, that means you have averted a big catastrophe to the communities, to their assets, to their livelihoods, and so on. If it doesn't unfold the way you expected it, you have still invested on communities.
The Horn of Africa has seen some of the worst climate-related disasters in recent years, including deadly droughts and subsequent flooding. Experts hope the regional transition from a reactive to a proactive approach to climate extremes will help protect vulnerable communities from their devastating impacts. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
The need to end the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, the U.S. imposing tariffs on other countries, and the downsizing of the U.S. federal government, those are some of the topics that President Donald Trump is expected to highlight when he delivers the first address of his second term in office to Congress this week. We'll have full coverage of President Trump's address to a special joint session of Congress in a special edition of our Daybreak Africa program starting at 01:30 UTC Wednesday morning. That's 8:30 p.m. here in Washington. You can catch it all wherever you listen to Daybreak Africa and at voaafrica.com. Tune in to hear from our hosts, James Barty and Carl Van Damme, and their guests.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
And that's all for this Monday, March 3rd, 2025, South Sudan in Focus edition. We now leave you with Zika by Jamnazi Africa.
hilo jambo lanisumbua akili. Ulimwengu umepasuka mahali. Mungu alipanga usiku saya kulala. Mbona walimwengu mumebadili mipango? Usiku sasa imegeuka mchana. Na mchana sasa ni kama usiku jamani.
We've been listening to Riziki by Jamnaz Africam. I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga, on this live broadcast from Washington. For more information on our programs, log on to voafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Patrick Dare, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Shara nyingi mwafanya usiku. Chai kwa mkate sasa mwauza usiku. Mahindi choma sasa mwauza usiku. Mali mali sasa mwauza usiku. Hata maombi nyingi mwafanya usiku.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Sudan's North Darfur state, an already catastrophic situation has become even worse over the past few weeks. This is particularly clear in Zamzam, one of Sudan's largest refugee camps for internally displaced persons. According to the United Nations, violence in and around the Zamzam displacement camp, which hosts hundreds of thousands of civilians, has further intensified. The UN Human Rights Office has confirmed reports of summary executions of civilians in areas that have changed hands, and warns that in White Nile State, a wave of attacks earlier this month is reported to have killed scores of civilians. At the same time, both the World Food Program and Doctors Without Borders, the main providers of health and nutrition services in Zamzam, have announced that due to the violence, they have suspended their activities there. The United States continues to call on Sudan's warring parties to cease hostilities, allow unhindered humanitarian access, and protect civilians, said U.S. Minister Counselor at the UN, John Kelly.
This brutal conflict has caused the world's largest humanitarian catastrophe, leaving over 630,000 Sudanese experiencing the worst famine in Sudan's recent history. Over 30 million people in need of humanitarian assistance, 12.5 million people displaced, and tens of thousands dead. For this reason, the warring party should facilitate the flow of aid across all border and cross-line routes to all parts of Sudan.
We have made clear to both sides our interest is in the restoration of peace and an end to the conflict, said Ambassador Kelly.
Both belligerents have committed atrocities, and the perpetrators must be held accountable. All warring parties must protect civilians and allow unhindered humanitarian access. We are gravely concerned with the RSF's ongoing attacks on the Zamzam IDP camp in northern Darfur, and reports militias allied with the SAF are using civilians as human shields. We have urged the RSF to end its attacks on displaced civilians in Zamzam and urged the SAF to ensure civilians and humanitarian workers can move freely in and out of Zamzam.
The ongoing war in Sudan is catastrophic and the cause of the world's largest humanitarian crisis. Its continued escalation is a threat to the stability and security of the region and beyond, said Ambassador Kelly. The United States is focused on resolving this crisis.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.